Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Hol dir zum Deutschlandspiel einen Big Mac und bekomme einen zweiten gratis dazu. Nur in deiner McDonald's-App. Beim Big Mac sind sich alle einig.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Nur für registrierte App-User an Aktionstagen in teilnehmenden Restaurants.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten, für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Catherine Murray. The man you can hear praying is George Antoun, a 43-year-old Palestinian. He's standing on the altar of the Holy Family Church, the only Roman Catholic parish in Gaza. George took refuge in the church compound in Gaza City 8 months ago, ignoring warnings to leave the north, leading a community of more than 500 people who stayed too. Together, they sheltered from the Israeli military action that came after the devastating killings and kidnappings by Hamas on October the 7th. George refused to leave because he's one of the last Christians of Gaza, and he's been telling his story to me. It's a story of faith and hope amidst destruction and loss.
If we have left the church, this church will be very much destroyed, and there will be no existence for the church anymore.
You know, there is no rice, there is no wheat flour.
I asked them, do you want to stay with me? And my wife and my children, they told me, either we go together or we die together.
This is very important. We will face a very dangerous hunger. Our children will die, and the old people here will die. Everybody will die here. So please, help us.
It's a story I didn't set out to follow, but George's fate gripped me from the first text he ever sent on October the 10th, the day this news broke.
The Israeli military has told the entire population in the north of the Gaza Strip to move for their own safety. More than 1 million Palestinians, including all those living in Gaza City, are affected. Israel has deployed tanks on Gaza's boundaries as it prepares for a possible ground offensive in response to Saturday's wave of killings and hostage taking by Hamas. Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Conricus is a spokesperson for the Israeli Defense Forces.
Civilians of Gaza City, evacuate south for your own safety and the safety of your families, and distance yourself from Hamas terrorists who are using you as human shields. The IDF will continue to operate with significant force.
I can still remember the intensity of watching these events unfold thousands of miles away in the UK. I couldn't begin to imagine what it would be like to be in the midst of it. On one side, you had grieving Israeli families and desperate calls for hostages to be returned. On the other, Palestinians being forced to leave their homes in fear of being caught up in the Israeli offensive against Hamas. I'd heard that aid agencies were withdrawing from the north of Gaza for safety. And as a journalist, I wanted an aid worker on the radio programme I work on to give us a sense of what was happening. I got some numbers of possible guests. George Antoun was one of them. He's the manager of Caritas in Gaza, the Catholic aid agency. I sent him a text, hoping he could give me an update. His reply to my request landed like a punch in the chest. I'd never received a text like it. It came in the middle of a news meeting, and I struggled to read it out. It said, "I'm not sure if I will survive today. This might be my first and last message to you. Pray for me." I stayed in touch with George. That message locked me in to finding out his fate. I learned that his family was the first to move into the Holy Family Church. Their home had been damaged by war. Hundreds more followed them, and George became the lay head of a committee dedicated to keeping them safe.
We are in the Catholic Church here sheltering with 500 people, and we need to provide them with food, water, and cleaning material to make sure that they will survive during this escalation and this war. We are very scared of what will be next, and we were asked to move to south, but we will not move. We will remain in our church. We will not go out of Gaza Strip. This is our land. This is our church. We will not leave our church at all.
I learned that George had three children around the same age as mine. We never spoke because phone and internet connections had been shut down. Instead, I'd send a message and watch it, willing two blue ticks to appear. A few days later, maybe when I was on a bus or in the supermarket, just going about my normal life, I'd get a message back, a WhatsApp from a war zone. And it was always a relief to hear they were safe, especially when the ground invasion got underway at the end of October.
Actually, nights are very terrible, very terrifying, hitting, bombing everywhere, targeting everything. We could not sleep at night at all. All the children are afraid, women are afraid, all people are afraid, and we are all awake to don't know where the next hit will be. So everybody feels unsafe, everybody feels targeted everywhere, you know. I don't know if you hear the bombarding now. I'm talking to you and there is so many bombarding around, and the Israeli fighters, they throw pamphlets, they throw warnings, printing warnings to all the people in Gaza Strip. And, you know, we are very afraid of the nights. We don't know what will happen next. We have no connection of internet. We have no connection of mobile phones, of landlines. We have no networks at all. We are trying with some eSIMs or satellite SIMs, but hardly find a connection. I'm very lucky to find a connection now, talking to everybody. Please pray for us.
George didn't heed the warnings to move south, to leave Gaza City, believing it was safer to stick together in the Holy Family compound, the Roman Catholic Church. 10 minutes' drive away is St. Porphyrius, the Greek Orthodox Church. They're both part of a diminishing Christian community in Gaza, with fewer than 1,000 people left. And that's another reason George stayed. He feels a responsibility to keep Christianity alive in the area. Rhiannon Delorne is from the charity Embrace the Middle East. Before the war, George took her on a tour of the Christian sites in the area.
The first place we visited was the Orthodox Church. It was a really, really hot day. We walked into the top level of the church and it was just really cool and really dark. They switched on the lights and there's just these beautiful, beautiful icons and murals all over the walls that tell the history of the church. And it was just a really calm and peaceful space. Just so old as well, and some of the columns date back to the original church, which was founded in 402 AD. The main area of the church is below ground level because it's so old that obviously the ground level has risen as people have built. It just really struck me that the roots of the Christian community are that deep in Gaza. They're so rooted there. And there's a cemetery at the back, which has just got generations and generations of family that have just lived in that space and served and worshipped in that land for such a long time.
That church is thought to be the third oldest in the world. It was sheltering 200 Orthodox Christians when it was struck by an Israeli missile in October. 18 people were killed. The IDF say unequivocally that the church wasn't the intended target and that Hamas is using civilians as human shields. Earlier that month, George had told me about the two churches and who was there.
Yes, actually, in the Catholic Church, there's only the Christian community members sheltering here, and also in the Orthodox Church, there are almost like 800 Christians sheltering in the two churches. We feel terrible. We feel scared. Everybody is like under trauma. What we do is we try to encourage people, tell them the truth and tell them the exact situation, ask them to pray and trust that Jesus Christ will never leave us alone.
On December the 16th, two women were killed by sniper fire as they crossed the courtyard of the Holy Family Church. The Latin Patriarchate, in charge of Roman Catholics in the area, said they'd been killed in cold blood and no warning was given. It said seven more were shot and wounded as they tried to protect others. The IDF say they're still reviewing what happened and that they take strikes on sensitive sites very seriously, especially churches that are holy sites for the Christian faith. I later learned that the women who died were George's cousin Samar and her mother, his auntie Nahida. I didn't hear anything from him for a month. The next thing I saw after Christmas were pictures. Pictures from the Holy Family Church that gave some hope. A group of smiling young children dressed in white for their first communion. A picture of a baby being baptised. Moments of celebration in the lives of this community. I found the parish on social media and could see videos of the congregation celebrating daily Mass. I could see George, dressed in the vestments of an altar server, reading from the lectern, taking a leading role in the spiritual life of the church. They'd run out of communion wafers, but had learned to make their own with what looked in pictures like a big circular hot iron. And this bit of DIY allowed them to continue their daily ritual.
Dear Catherine, this is one of the grace of the Lord that we could make communion wafers here in Gaza Strip, actually. As you know, we need to celebrate the Mass. Mass is our life, you know. In the Mass, there is the real presence of Jesus Christ through the Holy Eucharist. So if we are able to celebrate the Mass, that means we are still alive. This is our faith, and this is how we could get more and more food and supplies and more strength and stay safe in this war.
You're listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten, für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
Hi, I'm Alex Ritson, and on the Global News Podcast, we're in Italy for the G7 summit, where world leaders are discussing using interest from frozen Russian assets for crucial funding for Ukraine. We bring you the top stories from BBC News twice a day on weekdays and daily at weekends. Search for the Global News Podcast wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
I'm Catherine Murray, and I've been following the story of George Antone, one of the last Christians of Gaza. Prayer must have kept George going, as lack of food became a massive problem in the next few months, with agencies complaining they couldn't get supplies to Gaza City in the north. the Israeli army denied blocking aid. There were also reports that trucks were being emptied by bandits or desperate people. In his role as an aid worker, George was trying all the channels to get food to his community.
Hello, Catherine. We are not now receiving any food assistance or aid from any places. And there is no response, unfortunately. And we could not understand why they are not trying to help us here in Gaza. As we hear from the news that they help other places, other shelters. But in the church here, in the Holy Family Church, the Catholic Church, we have not received any assistance from them. And we are trying to reach as much as we can from all our friends and good people to try to help us and try to bring us some food supplies for the people here, as the market is totally empty of any food and the prices are 20 times, 30 times, you know. So you can imagine the poor people, how they are going to live. So we ask you please to keep praying, and also we are ask the people to hurry up and help us in the Catholic Church here.
One Monday in February, I received a text to say, "We're suffering from a lack of food in the church. This is a hunger period. We're managing with herbs, nuts, candies, whatever, but soon we'll have nothing to eat at all." Over the next few weeks, George's messages, although calm, became increasingly agitated.
This is very important. We can find some of our friends to help us buy some food from the south and help us to push on the Israeli army to let these trucks to, in order to let it in to the churches, you know, and help us secure this from the mafias and thieves. Otherwise, we will face a very dangerous hunger. Our children will die, and the old people here will die. Everybody will die here. So please, help us.
As Lent drew to a close, and the people of the Holy Family Church were called to celebrate the most important feast of their year, George seemed to take courage from the sufferings of Jesus and the Easter story.
We know that the resurrection of the Christian community will be soon from this war and all this mess that's happening here in Gaza Strip. So you also keep praying for us, please.
In April, I spoke to Father Gabriele Romanelli, the head priest of the Holy Family Church, who was on a trip to the UK. He'd been in Bethlehem when war broke out and couldn't get back to the parish in Gaza City. He's Argentinian and spoke to me about being separated from his flock.
Oh, this is a tough thing. I was waiting for medicines for one of our sisters, and unfortunately the border closed, and until now the Israeli authorities deny me the permission to come back. So I know the people there, I know the hard situation, and unfortunately to be separated from them is very hard. I am not naive. I know that if I can come back, I will find completely other parish, because we lost many members. We lost 33 members of the Christian community. Around 240 emigrated for the beginning of this war. So the Christian community, Catholic and Orthodox, we were 1,017, but now this number is reduced.
Father Romanelli told me one thing that had been keeping the parish going during those dark days. Pope Francis had been in daily contact with the Holy Family Church.
The Pope, from the beginning of the war, he speaks with us every day. The last month is with Father Joseph, and with me sometimes once a week, once 10 days when he needs something. But especially he wants the community feel that the Holy Father and all the church are close to the community. He asks to protect the children and he gives the blessing. If the connection is good, we put the speaker for the community so the people present their babies, their children, their even if the when the days that the Holy Father was sick, he called us to say, I am with you, God bless you, and we pray or work for the peace between Palestine and Israel.
In the days before Pentecost, an important date for the church in May, good news for the community. Father Romanelli got permission from the Israeli authorities to return to Gaza with an aid delegation and Cardinal Pizzaballa of Jerusalem. I watched on social media as Father Romanelli walked down the aisle of the church beaming, happy to be back with his people. After 8 months of contact via text and voice note, I wanted to speak to George. I heard the internet was patchy, but if the Pope can get through, I thought it was worth a try. And anyway, I had a lot of questions I needed to ask face to face. It's ringing.
Hello?
George!
Yeah, George. Hi, Catherine. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. It's so nice to see you.
Thank you very much.
How are you doing?
I'm fine. I was like 40 kilos more than this look.
Yeah. Well, it's so nice to see you smiling. It's amazing. How are your family? How's your wife and your daughters?
Yeah, very well. They are very well. And this is why I'm smiling, you know. They are everything for me, so they are very good. They are safe.
Do you feel safe at the moment?
I'm always feeling safe. I'm in the church.
And what about food? You said that you've lost a lot of weight and you managed to joke about that. Are you getting food now?
Yes, actually, yes. Now Gaza is receiving food. The food is available, but let's say the wheat flour and the canned food were missing for the fruits and the vegetables and the meat.
George, how have you got through this past 8 months?
How could I say? We experienced death. We were just living like we will not pass the next moment.
There were some dark days. Know?
Yes, yes. Very dark days, actually. Especially from November to March. Those months were terrible.
I heard from Father Romanelli that you're all living together in classrooms. What's that like, you know, all living in one small space, hundreds of people?
You know, we have so many social and mental problems. There is so many consequences for living together for 24 hours. So there is no spaces, no free time for anyone, no quiet time at all. And with that, you are suffering from lack of water, lack of food. You are depressed. You are scared of death. You are facing bombardment, you know, and you need to cope yourself not to get crazy. But we're still laughing, you know, because we experienced the hand of God with us all the time. Because we were all the time just pray for Jesus and Mary and Saint Joseph.
You were praying to the Holy Family.
Yes, yes. And especially sometimes we were praying to Saint Joseph. In the hard times, that was like a theme for us. Everybody reminds everybody to pray for Saint Joseph. You just say Saint Joseph and he will send us all the supplies. And that what happened.
Why Saint Joseph in particular? Is he the provider?
Yes, you know, he was the protector and provider for the Holy Family. So if God chooses St. Joseph to protect him, how much he will protect us through St. Joseph?
And you felt that?
Yes, of course we did.
Did you ever have moments where you thought, maybe I shouldn't be here? You know, you've got brothers and sisters who don't live here. And people have left, haven't they? Other people have emigrated.
No. I have decided from the first moment. Look, we have faith that if we have left the church, first, there will be no presence of Jesus Christ through the Holy Eucharist. Second, this church will be very much destroyed and there will be no existence for the church anymore. Third, this church could be used for non-Christian worships, you know, and we will lose it. Then we will lose our existence in our homeland. We're Palestinians, okay? So we understand those who left Gaza to look for security, look for education for their children. But I sat with my wife and my children, and we discussed about this decision. And I asked them, do you want to stay with me or do you want me to send you somewhere safe? And my wife and my children, they told me, either we go together or we die together or we save the church.
Can you imagine if there is a ceasefire? There's talk of it now. How long might it take for you to come out of the church? Because you won't be able just to leave the church as soon as there's a ceasefire. You'll have to stay there for some time while you rebuild.
Yeah, if the Israelis will allow the construction material to get in, so we can try to rebuild our houses, but this will take us time and this will cost us a fortune.
But you must be able to see a future where your daughters can grow up here and things have rebuilt.
They will help us to rebuild. This is how we are raising them now, actually. This is how we prepare them. They need to be involved in all the activities, you know, not to feel only scared and useless. They have to be strong. For instance, my girls, I have three daughters, and my wife, they sit together and they put some plans for our new house and how they will do this and what they want there and what is not necessary after what we have seen, and how they can save more food, more water for the future, because they do not guarantee if there will be another war or not. The color of the rooms, the color of the beds, the cover, everything. Yes, they have to think. I know they are losing one educational year, but the most important now is to know how to be survivor.
You must be really proud of them. They must be so proud of you.
Yeah, this is what I want, actually. I want them to all the time to remember me, you know, and be proud of me, of what we have done through this hard time. They saw the whole city, the whole destruction in the city. And we were giving them hope that because we stayed here, we will rebuild Gaza again, you know. And we explained to them the reason why we did not leave Gaza, because somebody should stay and rebuild, and somebody should stay and give service to those who stayed, you see. And this is what we do, and this is what they see us doing all the time.
Our paths crossed by chance, but I'm glad I followed George as he led the community of the Holy Family Church through the dark days since October the 7th. Thousands of people have died in Gaza. Israel continues to mourn those killed by Hamas and call for hostages to be freed. Despite what he's been through, George and his family are starting to think of the future. You've been listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service. The Last Christians of Gaza was produced and presented by me, Catherine Murray. It was edited by Rajiv Gupta.